Gary Thomas from the Wealth Technology Group is here. Good to see you.
Hey, Bex. How are you, John?
Gary, how are you?
I'm spectacular.
Well, Dent, aren't you always that way?
It's easy for us to talk good about ourselves.
That's right.
So
no one else will.
It's what others say about us that counts.
So the last couple of nights, there have been the Democratic debates between all 500 candidates.
Well, we left out a few.
Yeah, we did. Right. I know. We didn't get to all of them. But one thing that that you've been hearing a lot between like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren is this idea of student debt being erased. And you know, as a father who's got one kid in college and another one about a year away from being in college too, all I'm thinking is, how is that even possible?
Well, it would be a nice thing, you know. But so obviously, if that was going to happen, there's going to have to be a magic wand, all right, in terms of. And I just want to pose a question. Suppose we do wipe out the debt for your kids and this generation of kids, and then we get another administration in here, like, you know, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, 8 years from now, and then everybody starts to pay again. But the debt issue is really holding back the growth of our economy, because kids are coming out of school, and I talk to parents, and their kids got $80,000-$90,000 worth of debt. That means you can't buy a house right away. That means that you're not going to be able to do the things maybe that you and I were doing at the same age because of not having that amount of debt.
And because they don't make Boone's Farm wine anymore.
Well, that's right, or Ripple.
Right,
there you go.
I can't find it.
Are we talking about current debt or future debt?
Well, nobody's really clarifying that, are they? And I mean, there's more student debt in this country than there are debt for automobiles and consumer goods. And it's bringing things down. But you just can't have a magic wand to wipe everything out. I mean, I have a little mortgage. I'd like that wiped out too, you know, it'd make me feel good.
Well, there's two things about this I really don't. That kind of just explode in my head every time I think about this. First of all, if I'm understanding economics well enough, there's no such thing as free anything. So if you say I'm going to eliminate your debt, someone's paying for that debt to be eliminated.
It either creates inflation. There's either higher taxes to do it, and there's actually a lot more. And basically, there's something. Whenever you give something away for free, there's a certain kind of what we'll say, I'll call it a moral danger or a moral hazard, called. That basically, if it's free, it's not valued as much. And you know, there's potential for abuse. And I feel the same way about, hey, you know, all of the kind of free proposals. Now, I think we ought to be able to structure the repayment of debt based upon our ability to pay. If somebody is making a contribution to the society and they're going into social work or they're going into some kind of a job that is paying, maybe they're making a great contribution to society, but unfortunately society doesn't value that with a big check.
Right.
I think they should have a longer way to do it. Or there's ways to buy down. You know, when you go and buy a car at zero interest, actually there's a contribution between the dealer and profit and the car manufacturer. So maybe there's a way, for instance, for certain individuals, for them to pay less of an interest rate based upon maybe their income. But when
or make it tax deductible too.
This is a very good point, Bex, because we talk a good line. Education is held up here, you know, as sort of the pinnacle of things that we need to do. We say we value education in this country, but there's really not that many parts of the tax law that will show you that we really value education in terms of what we provide or how we make it easy for people to move forward.
And the second part of my question was, So let's say we do this. Let's say we eliminate some of this debt. On the institutional side, colleges, you know, depending on where your kid is going, if they're going to a state school, they could spend as little as $27,000 a year. If they go to a private school, they could spend as much as $60,000-$70,000 a year.
Exactly.
On the institutional side, though, what is to prevent a college who's going to get their money no matter
Let's
what.
Let's charge whatever we want.
Exactly. So and this that $70,000 school could become $90,000 or $100,000 next year.
You're exactly right, and that was going to be my you're a genius because that was going to be my next point.
Well, I'm going to write that down.
Well, don't
you're
ever expect to hear anybody say that again.
So, but, you know, exactly. Whenever you have something that is that there's no reins on it or no limits on it, but we need to do something. And right now you got these like very broad plans out there they're ideas. But the fact that we're going to wave a magic wand and say, hey, all you folks out there, you don't have that debt anymore. I'm not sure that that's a good thing. I think there's a lot of things that we can do. We could lower the interest rate. We could stretch out how it's paid. It could be paid over, you know, as a percentage of income over time. We could give incentives for people that are working in areas that essentially that are underserved. So there's a lot of, or we could have national service in some way, like some other countries do. You know, you volunteer for 2 years in an AmeriCorps kind of thing and you get a buy down of the debt. So there's a lot of things that we could do. I just don't think we're being, it's the easy answer is let's have a pen and wipe it out. I don't think we're being creative enough.
I think that's one of Buttigieg's ideas is 1 year of national service. Bax, what are you talking about? Nothing's for free. When I see that sign in the store that says buy two, get one free,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting that third one for free.
You're not really getting it.
Of course I am.
Because in order for you to get the free one, you still got to buy one.
Well, I got to buy two.
Yeah, but you go to those bars that say free beer tomorrow, and it's...
Well, tomorrow never comes. Gary, I'm not a particularly bright guy, so I didn't realize something I probably should have until recently. I was under the impression that based on the fact that I'm born in 1960, that according to that formula of Social Security, of when you can retire... That meant that I had to work until I was 67. But what I've discovered is I only have to work until 67 to get my Social Security. I can retire at 65.
Well, you could retire at 62, and you will get 70%. You will get 70, you will get 70% of the Social Security benefit that you would have received at your full retirement age. So if your full retirement age is 67 and you retire at 62, then you would get a 70% benefit. For instance, so if your benefit was $1,000 a month at age 67 and you retire at 62, your benefit then would be permanently set at $700 a month. Now, if you decided to work after 62, and you're collecting that $700, you can only earn something like $17,850 in wages, or else your Social Security benefit gets cut by $1 for every $2 in wages.
But if I have the financial wherewithal to retire at 65 and then not collect Social Security till 67 so that I get the full benefit, I'm done here in 6 years.
You could be right. That's, well, don't give away those secrets.
Yeah, oh, hey, listen. Anybody can count.
You could be done here sooner if you really wanted to.
Yeah, right. Well, I could be done here financially.
So you could either wait, but you also have to do the math. So let's say you did retire early, and then, but that's 2 years, and you waited till age 67. In fact, you could wait until age 70 if you. If you waited until age 70 and your full retirement age was 67, you'd get 128% of your age 67 benefit at age 70.
Yeah, but the way my health has been in the last few years, that's why I don't want to wait to retire at 67.
Well, but my point is, as soon as if you have the financial wherewithal to retire, why not take your Social Security benefit the day you walk out that door? Because what happens is you'll get a reduced benefit, but you would be collecting it for 2 years. You know, none of us know how long we're going to be walking around on this earth here.
Well, so if let's say that your example works, and let's say John retires in 5 years.
Six.
Whatever, I'm just making a hypothetical. Yeah. And he gets another job, and like you said, the benefit gets reduced. Once he leaves that job, once he feels like he's too old to work, does the benefit go back up?
Well, here's the thing. At John's full retirement age of 67, his Social Security benefit won't be reduced as a result of wages. Between if he takes Social Security between age 62 and age 67, then there will be a reduction of his Social Security benefit if he earns over $17,600 a year after he's pulled the trigger on Social Security. Once you reach your full retirement age, whether it's 67, for some people it's 66 and 4 months, you're able to make as much wages as you want without your Social Security benefit being reduced.
I thought it was 65 or 67. What's this 66 and 4 months?
Well, that's a great point. What happened was way back in 1989 or so, they moved the Social Security age to age 67, your full retirement age to a maximum of age 67 if you were born after 1960. But if you're born between 1954 and 1960, basically it's an incremental change. So like for instance, if you were born in 1955 in so many months, your full retirement age will not be 67. It'll be somewhere
that many
between
months.
Right, exactly.
Oh,
it's like a 2% reduction or so for every month.
Wow.
So, but to your point, the Social Security law is complicated, and for many people, it's their single largest source of retirement income, and making that right Social Security decision is something that you really want to be careful about, because sometimes more is not better. Wait, you get more, but what are you giving up between the time that you could have had Social Security and when you decided to collect it?
One of the standard markers for most people about how the economy is actually doing is when they go to the gas pump and they realize it's, you know, $2.55 a gallon or whatever, but as long as it's under $3 or $4 like we've gotten before or higher, then things seem to be okay. There's tensions in the Middle East, and oftentimes gas prices are affected by, you know, the political climate of oil-producing nations. Should we be expecting that prices are going to go up, or is it too soon to tell?
We have a very fragile area over there, and what sort of kept prices down is the fact that the U.S., because of new technologies, has become a bigger energy oil, hydrocarbon-producing country than it had been in the past. But, you know, we still need to use foreign oil in order to run our economy at full speed. And so you see a couple more tankers blow up over there, or you see some more threats over there, and you could see a real spike in oil prices and gasoline prices. And as we all know, by and large, because we travel more, gasoline prices tend to trend up a little bit in the summer anyway. So last year was one of the few exceptions. But basically, I think you could see a real spike, and that kind of spike in energy prices can really put a dagger in the heart of the economy.
I'm sure we'll be fine. It's just like casinos use chips, so you don't realize how much money you're spending. I don't even know the price of gas anymore, because I use a local gas station has an app, and you simply pull up to the app and it knows what gas station you simply pull up to the pump and it knows what gas station you're at. You put in the pump number and a code, and boom, you just get your gas.
It's free.
It's not free, but and I know I put the lowest grade possible in my car and I put the highest grade possible in my bike. But I still don't know what the prices
are. But we don't pay that much attention when it's in this sort of this range that it's been in.
Mm-hmm.
But because you don't see anything on your favorite radio TV station anymore saying, hey, the lowest gas prices are on Memorial Drive in Chicopee.
No one's going to Gas Buddy right now.
Right, exactly. But as soon as things start to rise, we become more conscious about the price, and we make those tougher choices. And you might be having two or three apps on your phone by that time.
I hope so.
You can check out more about what Gary's talking about on wealthtechnology.com or give him a call at 1-800-266-6793. Gary, it's good to see you.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a great holiday.
Thank you.
725 at Rock 102.